Betsy. No, Missy, you will not. If you were fool enough to remain unwed, you are scarce fit to fend for yourself out in the world. How should it appear before the world, I ask you, if 'twere known you had left your father's protection? No, Missy, 'twill not serve.
And not even the reminder that she had her own competency had moved him. Quite the contrary, in fact, for it brought home to him again that her late mother had been remiss by allowing a female child an inheritance ungoverned by her father, or any other responsible male, upon her majority.
As to that, Missy, I can only say I'll not allow you to waste your competence. An establishment of your own. No. Rather than thinking of such a thing, you should be asking my advice about investing in the funds.
Then he'd ended with his usual lecture.
Aye, when you are naught but an aged spinster in this house, you will thank me for the care I have given you, Harriet. Though I must admit, 'tis a sorrow to me that you have set yourself against the married state. Hannah cannot quite like it, you know. Two grown females in the same household is like oil and water, after all, and they do not set well together.
The care he had given her, 'twas a jest at best, she thought rebelliously. All he'd done after her mother's death was to remarry a widow as cold as he was. And between them, they'd made it plain from the very beginning that a female child was naught but a burden. They'd put no expense into a season for her. Hannah sniffing, 'twould be but money wasted, for Harriet was too shy to take. And it was true, Harriet supposed, for the thought of parading about on the marriage mart had terrified her. But they'd expected her to take the vicar's second son, a singularly pompous, stolid man who positively hated cats. And when she'd refused his suit, they'd punished her in a dozen ways, making it plain they begrudged her very presence, calling her naught but a spinster repeatedly, and yet denying her any escape but marriage. It was no wonder that her only brother had bought a commission and fled from the dreary life at Rose Hill. The door to her father's study opened, and she could hear her step-cousin gathering his hat and stick from a footman. Impulsively, she dumped the kitten gently to the floor and slipped out into the hall as he disappeared out the front door. She raced for the back door and sped around the house, holding her skirts decorously above her slippers.
"Psst, Richard!" she hissed from around the corner.
He'd been about to mount the step of his curricle when he heard her. He hesitated, his face betraying his anger and his impatience. Clearly, he was in no mood for the merest pleasantry with anyone.
"Over here!"
She tried to keep her voice low enough not to draw her father's attention. Richard turned around, ready to give whoever it was a sharp set-down, and then he saw her. And for once, there was a certain mischief in those dark eyes of hers that reminded him of another time, a time when they'd been children together, shortly after his aunt's marriage to her father. She'd been a lively girl once, but that was before years of his Aunt Hannah's sober strictures and cold dislike had taken their toll. Now she'd become a quiet, timid woman, one who'd failed in the expected quest of a husband. And at 24, she was but a spinster on the proverbial shelf, doomed to remain in her father's house under his Aunt Hannah's dominance. He felt a surge of pity for her, and yet he could not entirely forget his anger.
"What is it, Harry? I've scarce got time."
Her face fell, and he relented.
"All right, I suppose I am not in such a hurry as all that."
"Shh."
She beckoned to him from the corner of the house.
"I heard the quarrel with my father, Richard,"
she told him as he came closer.
"I could not help it."
"I'll wager the whole household did,"
he muttered dryly.
"Is it truly a wonderful horse?"
He was about to retort that it didn't make any difference now, that it was going to be someone else's horse anyway, but there was an eagerness, an almost childlike intensity in those dark